100.3 K-Talk Podcast. Darkness Radio. Saturday and Sunday nights, 9 till midnight on 100.3 K-Talk.
Good evening and welcome back to the show. This is Darkness Radio. We are your home for the best in paranormal talk radio every Saturday and Sunday night, 9 p.m. till midnight. Thank you for joining us here each week and spending your weekends with us. Let your friends, relatives, and neighbors know about the show. You can tell them to check out the show. And if they can't listen live, they can go to ktlkfm.com. Click on the Darkness Radio podcast link, and there they can find the information about our show. Our guest this evening, I'm excited to have back on the show. It's been about two and a half years since we've had her with us. Dr. Pamela Heath has a BA in psychology from the University of Missouri at Columbia and an MD from the University of Texas Medical Branch at Galveston. She became board certified in anesthesiology in 1985 and has practiced medicine at a variety of locations since then. She began having spontaneous psychic experiences in the early 1990s, and in 1995, in an effort to understand her own abilities, she returned to school for a second doctorate degree, this time in parapsychology. Her dissertation, this is a long little blurb I've got on here, Doc. It's going to take me forever to get through this. I just want to talk to you. Let's bring her on the line with us. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show Dr. Pamela Heath. Good evening.
Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. Now, we had the chance to talk about 2.5 years ago, almost 3 years ago here in our first season, and we talked about your book. And I'll tell you, that was one of the most heated shows we ever got. We got some great love mail, a couple of hate mails, and it was one of the more interesting topics. And maybe go ahead, explain us the first book we spoke to you about was about suicide.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's actually my second book. But, one of the things that we were looking at is that there have been a lot of messages, supposedly from the afterlife, talking about what it's like for people who commit suicide. And our feeling, John Climo wrote this with me. He's really considered the world's greatest expert on channeling. And I felt like if this information was out there and people sort of were informed and knew what they were getting into, that a lot of them might make a different choice, a choice not to take their own lives. And there's a surprising amount of information. We actually pulled from, I think I must have gone through about 400 or 500 books, and we pulled everything that was really particularly relevant to suicide, and it was about 125 different books, which all had some pretty similar messages, despite the fact they came from many different times and different cultures.
Now, again, I'll mention that the title of the book is Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife.
Yeah, thank you.
And I will say it is still one of the most powerful books I've read in the 4 years we've done the show.
Well, we're actually working on a derivation of that book in some ways right now that will be out in April 2010, but one of the things we were trying to do with that book was sort of make a point that when we say this is what the afterlife says about suicide, that we're not making this up, that this material really is out there. If we referenced it out the wazoo, that people can go out there and see for themselves what's said, and we tried to organize it to make it easier for people. So we looked at different topics in terms of, general spirit attitudes towards the afterlife, what transitions are like, why people say they killed themselves, what messages they would say to other people who want to commit suicide, what they would say to those left behind. And we really had a couple different major purposes. One, of course, is to try and help people know what they're getting into if they do want to take their own lives, but also to try and promote some healing from those left behind, because from what we can see, it's absolutely devastating to everybody around someone who commits suicide.
Well, and the reason, and I want to talk to you about your other books as well, but I wanted to start the show off with this. We have 2 hours together here. And the reason I wanted to talk about this book and kind of rekindle for people is I know this is a trying time for a lot of people in life. There's a lot of depression going on with the economy the way it is and jobs the way they are and so on. And I think your message is very powerful. And, you know, I mean, we've talked about suicide on the show in the past, especially around the holidays and how important it is to seek help. But sometimes, you know, the realization of what happens to those, you know, I mean, we're automatically in the belief system. So many people through religion and religious backgrounds believe if you take your own life, basically you're just going to spend eternity burning in hell. And from the information that you're able to get from the channeling sessions and the different documents that you researched, I almost think that a lot of what you're finding is a lot worse than spending eternity burning in hell. It's, you know, and I liked the fact that you guys were able to present it in a very understandable way. And the one method I'm referring to is, of course, the people that commit suicide are then forced, if I recall correctly, to live the lives of each person that they affected because of their suicide, to know their pain, to see the outcome of how lives were changed because of their death. I mean, it was almost like It's a Wonderful Life with real pain coming through on this.
But at the same time, it's not like they're damned to eternity either. Mm-hmm. There is hope for them. There's progress. People are there in the spirit realm to try to help them. But we, all of us, go through a self-judgment phase. And it's actually, I think, for many people, harder to forgive ourselves for the pain we've caused others than it is for us to forgive others for the pain they've caused us. And you really see that with a suicide. There's a whole chapter of nothing but messages of regret. And it's like once they've crossed over and after, you know, they start to get out of their own, sometimes they're so walled off in depression, they have no awareness at all mm-hmm. of the fact that they've even succeeded in dying. But once they realize what they've done and that they've lost their body, they can't go back. There is no second chance, at least until you reincarnate again. It's just devastating for them to suddenly realize all these people who cared about them that they didn't even think of. And it's sort of interesting that one of the messages that comes from the spirits is they don't exactly condemn suicide, but they do say they consider it selfish and short-sighted. Because anything that you try to skip in this lifetime, you'll just have to do again. You know, it's like skipping a grade in school. You know, you're just going to have to do that whole year over again, and it may be even worse for you next time. So it's like if you hang in there and do your work this time, not only will you be able to feel good about yourself on the other side and not have to deal with the unnecessary pain you've caused others, or at least not on that level.
Right, and you know,
you won't have to repeat those lessons.
One of the biggest lessons I learned from talking to you guys, you know, 3 years ago is, you know, this suicide is nothing more than a permanent solution to temporary problems. And that seems to be what a lot of the spirits were able to reflect back to you or reflect back to the channelers was the fact that, you know, it was something that just got them at that moment. And had they just hung in a little bit longer, life would have been different. Yeah. And it was just, you know, we all get into that funky
that's often
thinking.
The case.
Right.
And some people sort of repeat doing suicide lifetime after lifetime, too, and they kind of get into a habit with it that it can be hard for them to break. It just makes it that much more important for them to hang in there. And sometimes I think people don't realize what a success they are making of their lives mm-hmm. just by slogging onward. You know, sometimes that's it's not like you have to be wealthy or famous. Sometimes just putting one foot in front of the other, that's a major success, you know, especially when times are as tough as they are right now. And, you know, I don't know hardly anybody who isn't hurting on some level right now with the economy the way it is.
Yeah, and it is. It's a spooky time for a lot of people. You know, a lot of people that were once, you know, very prominent and making a lot of money and living the high life are now definitely feeling the pinch. And you're hearing about it more and more, people that are taking their lives, their families' lives, because they don't know how to
go on.
Yeah, go on with this. I've got a call from Mark from Albertville. Do you mind if we take a quick call here?
Sure.
All right, go ahead. We've got Mark online from Albertville. Thanks for calling in tonight, Mark.
Hi. Yeah, thanks for taking my call. This is a sensitive subject to me because we have a family member that committed suicide and left my cousin, actually in Wisconsin, it's not local, and four kids. And I had always heard, as a, I'm a devout traditional Catholic, and I had always heard that the church teaches that suicide is an instant ticket straight down to eternal perdition, you know. And I had just turned on your show, so I don't know the whole basis of what you or your guests are saying, but it, as brief as I can in the next 10 to 15 seconds, I read a book that somebody referred me to from Maria Sima, who is a person in the church who was under the tutelage of her bishop, and she was receiving visions and messages from what we call the poor souls in purgatory. Now, purgatory, of course, is you know, purifying people before heaven. If you die and you're not totally out of the state of grace, but you have to be purified because you got to be in the total state of grace for the beatific vision, in other words, being in the presence of God. And when I read her book, I broke down and cried because I prayed for the soul of my cousin's husband. And what happened in this book is she had been visited by a number of souls who committed suicide. And one of the things that they had said is that while suicide in and of itself is without any other qualification is a ticket to hell, according to church teaching. The fact is that the church allows, and Maria Sima said, with these souls in purgatory, and again, under the tutelage of her bishop, so it was, you know, to be sure that it was divine rather than diabolical apparitions or locutions, whatever you call them. But the thing about it is that there is a allowance that people who commit suicide who were not in their right mind at the time, God understands that. And that there is a possibility that many people who commit suicide are not in their right mind. And therefore, if, you know, the church teaches for any sin to be a mortal sin, of course, being a, unless it's, you know, absolved, is a ticket to hell. In order for it to be mortal sin, the condition is you have to know it's a sin and you have to willingly cooperate with it. And so a lot of people who commit suicide, even if they know it's a mortal sin, are not willingly cooperating with it because there's extenuating circumstances, if you will, or severe mental pressures or debilitations that cloud their ability to make rational judgments.
Exactly.
And so I'm suggesting that, you know, when I heard what you said, my heart was put a little bit at ease that there's enough evidence, and I talked with a very, very holy, devout priest, and he said, you know, suicide, you know, is a mortal sin, but for it to be a mortal sin, you have to know it and you have to willingly, you know, still go ahead and say, I know that I'm condemning myself forever and I'm going to do it. So a lot of people who commit suicide may know it's a mortal sin, but other things in their mind are such that they aren't able to rationally really truly be responsible for their action and therefore.
Right. God, the church is definitely, the church has definitely softened its stance on that over the years.
Right. So I'm asking if this author, and I just came into the conversation, so you might have already covered this, so I'm asking if this author would agree with that or finds that that is consistent with what she's learned.
Well, the spirit realm certainly does note that a lot of people who cross over by their own hand, it may be an accident. For example, sometimes with drugs or other things, it's an accident. Rather than intentional, and they also recognize that sometimes people are mentally ill or on drugs that they aren't in their right mind, and that there are many cases where I think that is treated a little more softly. But I would say that every suicide is capable of moving forward eventually in the afterlife, that none of them are doomed to burn in hell forever. To a certain extent, they all have to suffer through what they did, and they have to learn from that. And it can be a very painful process because not only are they going through other people's lives and seeing how they affected, their actions affected other people, but they're also aware of other people's thoughts and emotions. So if people are angry about them having committed suicide, they feel that. You know, they feel that even more strongly than the person who's thinking that.
Right, which could lend itself then, Dr. Heath, to the fact that that could be part of the learning process for them as well, correct? That
they
had to learn this.
And it certainly, you can consider that a hell or a form of purgatory, either one. But they, you know, once they are sort of worked with by spirits to try and see the bigger picture, to try and understand that they had other choices, and they, I don't think they're stuck. And one of the things that a lot of mediums who come from a very strong bias, regardless of the religion that they come from, you can sort of color what material you get through.
Right.
And so you sort of have to understand that, you know, although you can find some mediums who will follow that, yes, they're thrown into hell and burn forever, most people say no, that doesn't seem to happen. And there do seem to be variations in how, what their course is like in the afterlife, depending on how they crossed over, what their intention was. In other words, if you look at somebody who killed themselves, but they did it in order to save their family, then that would be...
Right, there's different levels
intention.
Of...
That'd be kind
right.
of a heroic kind of a thing.
Sure.
So it's treated differently depending on the cause.
Well, let's take... I want to cover that when we come back, because that brings up an interesting point. I know our phone lines are starting to light up here as well. Mark, thanks for calling in and being a part of the show.
Thank you.
I appreciate it, and I hope that you'll keep listening in with us as well. We have to take a quick break. Dr. Heath will come back with more. You're listening to Darkness Radio. We'll be back with more and more of your calls right here on 100.3 K-Talk.
The latest news at the top and bottom of each hour.
News alerts at once.
This is 100.3 K-Talk.
Good evening. Welcome back to the show. This is Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, and joining me this evening is Pamela Ray Heath. And Dr. Heath, we're talking about her book that we actually talked about, covered on the show almost three and a half years ago, I guess, Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife. We'll cover some of her other books throughout the rest of the segments of the show. I do want to make a quick mention. We will take the 11th caller right now. We do have a copy of the book Workplace Spells that we're giving away. And if you're interested and you'd like a copy of Workplace Spells, you can give us a call at 651-989-5855, 651-989-5855, and Stan will take your call and get you a copy of that book. We're going to go back to our guest, Dr. Pamela Heath, and we've got another call in here. Do you mind taking a couple more calls, Dr. Heath?
Absolutely, but I'd like to say one last thing real
Please.
Quick
sure.
to the last gentleman.
Uh-huh.
The fact that he was praying for this soul makes a difference. It really is very helpful. So that's very good.
Well, let me mention this to you. And Steve and Hudson, hold on the line. We're going to get to you. You made a point in the last bit that I wanted to talk about when you talked about the fact that, you know, doing it as a heroic gesture, mm-hmm. You know, would be considered differently. And I know we briefly touched on this, you know, 3 years ago. But what happens then with the 9/11 bombers who believed that they were doing by their religion what they were supposed to do, and they felt that in a sense they were being heroic, crashing a plane into buildings, taking out the infidels, and that they would be rewarded upon entry to heaven or whatever
right.
they believe
well, most
in.
Most of them were coming from a place of hatred. And so, you know, needless to say, they weren't rewarded. They were with God the same way every soul is with God in the afterlife, but it wasn't the way they expected to be with God. The 9/11 bombers are a little bit unique, though, because so many souls died at the same moment that were from widely different cultures. They apparently became sort of enmeshed and kind of this soup-like thing, and all of a sudden their minds were forced to be open to these other worldviews. And just as the Westerners became aware of the Muslim fundamentalist worldview, the Muslims became aware of the Western worldview, and it was very confusing. Many of them felt they were drowning, they were losing their identity. But ironically enough, it seemed to, in some ways, be sort of helpful spiritually to mm-hmm. some of them, especially the ones that were capable of love and weren't mired in hatred. But, you know, if you come from a place of hatred, and I mean, regardless of whether you say you're doing it from God, basically they're doing it out of fear and hatred, that's not going to benefit you in the afterlife. You know, you're going to actually be put in a bit of isolation until you deal with those emotions and kind of let go of them.
Well, a lot of, you know, a lot of the religions believe, too, and, you know, Catholicism, you know, a lot of the Americanized versions of religions believe that, you know, God forgives those that grow up in countries where God is not known. So they're not automatically cast to hell when they die because it wasn't like they were ever exposed to God or the teachings. So do you believe from the work that you found out and the stuff that you guys were able to do, do you think that the bombers were doing the same thing, even though it came from a place of hatred, if that's how they grew up and that's what they knew? And this is, you know, they never knew a love, compassion, forgiveness type of thing. Do you think that has an effect on the amount of punishment or the amount of judgment that they must face as well?
Well, they're judging themselves. I mean, from what we can tell, there's very few channel messages that talk about judgment from above or from an outside source. Basically, all of us have to judge ourselves. Now, the spirit guides who oversee that process make sure that you don't shortchange it.
Right.
And so, you know, if you're hating everybody and you're thinking, I did great killing people, and we got some messages because we did channel some suicide bombers, or get those messages anyway, they're not going to be allowed to move forward until they really understand what they did and what it meant and how it impacted other people's lives and how it impacted even their own family's lives. Often their own families didn't agree with what they were doing.
Right.
From what we can tell, they're pretty much put in isolation, and it's going to be a long, slow process. But
right, because they have to kind of relive all of the people that they killed and all of the lives of the people that they affected.
Yes, moving forward in time. Because you killed somebody's husband, how is their life moving forward without that husband? How would it have been if you hadn't done that and they had had that other person in their life? What's the impact?
Interesting.
And they can take thousands of years potentially to go through all this.
Mm. All right. Well, let's take, we got Steve from Hudson online with us. Steve, thanks for calling in tonight.
Hey, Dave. Yeah, last time I called in on this similar subject, the lights went out in Hudson, and I was the only one to hear the woman's answer.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, it's supernatural. anyway. I'm probably coming from the side of the research where you got the information on the people from suicide, but this is more of a suicide where I'm a Catholic, and I prayed for this person that they had said it was a suicide. It was widely reported, and I was in a great deal of duress. I went in front of the Blessed Sacrament that night, and I prayed the rosary, prayed the Divine Mercy, and then at about 3 o'clock in the morning, I received almost a beatific experience. I wasn't from the person, but it was it was from the Blessed Virgin Mary, and I had more like an inner feeling than an interlocution. But it's like what I had read books on these people that came back and talked about their afterlife and that situation's purgatorial and that, and but this one was more of the person's okay type of situation.
Oh, nice, yeah.
And then about a year later, I found out through the autopsy reports that it probably was a murder.
Mm.
And it was, I don't know if you've ever encountered anything like that. I didn't quite hear, are you Catholic?
I am not, no.
Oh, okay, but you just, you take a very serious approach to the punishment there, you know, and which I was. I thought, well, this is a Catholic that did this, and they're, you know.
So did you come across any of that, Dr. Heath, when you guys were doing it, where people thought that they were suicide victims, but it was actually an accidental, or it was a murder or an accidental death like that?
There were some spirits that came back and said that, certainly that it was an accident. For example, one kid was out with his gun, and they thought he'd shot himself. He tripped and accidentally, you know, shot himself. Again, intention is important in how things get weighed in the afterlife. Their intention is important for all of us, regardless of the decision that we're making, not just in terms of whether we take our own lives, but how we treat other people around us. So they just ask that we be thoughtful when we're making our choices and understand there are ramifications and that we're going to be the ones judging ourselves when we look back on those. But prayer, you know, every spirit just about will come back and say that prayer is helpful. They appreciate prayer regardless of their manner of passing. It's a very beneficial thing, and it's one way that you can help those who have crossed over.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in, Steve. We have to take a quick break. We'll come back with more. Dr. Pamela Heath, you're listening to Darkness Radio. And if you'd like more information, you can check out Dr. Heath's website by going to pamheath.com. PamelaHeath.com. Sorry, on my website, they cut you short, so I'll have them re-add that. PamelaHeath.com, PamelaHeath.com. We'll be back with more. You're listening to the best of paranormal talk radio. This is Darkness Radio on 100.3 K-Talk.
One man, one mind, one lovable fuzzball. Cuddle up with Rush. Monday morning at 11, only on 100.3 K-Talk.
Good evening. Welcome back to the show. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Our guest this evening, Dr. Pamela Heath. And Dr. Heath is going to be joining us at the first annual Darkness Radio Science Fair that takes place at the very haunted Queen Mary Hotel in Long Beach, California. We're doing that September 10th through the 13th, and this is an amazing event. We've got some of the top creators of paranormal equipment in the field. Bill Chappell, creator of the Ovilus and the Paranormal Puck. Andy Kopic, who's created quite a bit of the technology you see on Ghost Hunters and Ghost Hunters International. Gary Galka, the inventor of the Melmeter. Paul Bradford is joining us. We have a new guest that we'll be announcing tomorrow night that's joining the lineup. We also have speakers Marie D. Jones, Dr. Barry Taff, and Dr. Pamela Heath is joining us. She's going to be delivering her talk, Parapsychology, the Key Research Findings for Paranormal Investigators, along with Adam Bly, Jeff Belanger, Dr. Michael Shermer, Bill Murphy, Patrick Burns, Chris Fleming, and myself. For all the information and more, join us. Take a look at our website at darknessevents.com. Again, that's darknessevents.com. Click on the Darkness Radio Science Fair banner, and you can find out all about this. We have prizes that we're going to be giving away for new inventors, people like you that are listening, that have created a new piece of equipment that you use on your ghost hunting ventures. Bring it with. We're going to have a panel of scientists look it over, engineers, and you can win a $1,500, $1,000, or a $500 grant. You'll also win the opportunity for the top two creators. Your items will get to appear on an episode of Ghost Adventures and on one of the new Spooked DVDs and specials that appear on the Sci-Fi Channel. So all that information and more, go check out the website. We have price plans for everybody. It's going to be an amazing time. Go check it out at darknessevents.com, and you can join us with Dr. Heath. She'll have her books there, autographing those as well. We're going to go back to the show now. Dr. Pamela Heath is our guest, and right now we're discussing her book, Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife. And as I said, Dr. Heath, it's certainly a hot-button topic. A lot of people have a lot of thoughts on it and a lot of beliefs. Do you have a religious background with this? I know science and religion don't always mix. And I'm not asking you to have to get specific in it, but do you fall into a religious belief system as well?
I probably come closest now to Buddhist.
Okay.
In terms of that, I believe in reincarnation, and there are many paths to God.
But believe in a God or a higher consciousness?
Yeah, I certainly
level.
Do. I think it's hard for anyone who's a psychic not to feel that way.
Do you believe, though, that prayer is actually an effectual thing because God is hearing us, or is it an effectual thing because of intent of more than one person coming together and working to a common good?
Well, the spirit realm tells us that they actually see prayer almost as a physical kind of energy that comes from us. And it doesn't have to be any particular format of prayer. It doesn't have to be in a church. It's almost any kind of well-wishing has an impact in the spirit realm, and they'll actually see it like almost like an aurora borealis or rainbows of light energy coming to them. And that's probably one of the commonest messages that you see in the channel literature is, and I've certainly had it too when I've been in seances and things, the spirit's coming and asking you to pray for them to help them advance spiritually, or it can be very healing, and I think it can also help the living. There have been studies, I know there was one in a Southern medical journal that showed that prayer would help decrease the number of people who had problems after open heart surgery. And people would be discharged sooner, they had fewer complications. Yeah, and this was blind study. I mean, so prayer seems to have an effect on both the living and the dead.
We've had amazing results, and I don't know if I've mentioned this to you in the past, but Darkness Radio on our website, on MySpace, we do quite a bit with healing and prayer requests. And people will tell me, you know, this is going on, that's going on, can you please pray for us? We get as much information as we can, usually a full name, the city and state, and malady that they're dealing with. And we've had, I can't even begin to tell you, and certainly I'm not trying to take credit for it or Darkness Radio. We just bring it to the people that that are asking for healing and prayer. And we've seen miraculous things. A good friend of ours, Cheryl Whitman, who belongs to the Long Island Paranormal Investigative Group, collapsed a little over a year ago from a massive asthma attack. And they had called in, from what I understand, the priest to deliver last rites. And one of her teammates reached out to us and said, Dave, we know you do a lot of work with the prayer and healing. Can you please post this? Cheryl needs the help. And I just saw Cheryl a few weeks ago at the Gettysburg event, or was it Gostock? It was Gostock, I'm sorry, out in Salem. And she came up to me and gave me a big hug, and she just said, this is something you need to know. And mind you, this girl was in a coma when the prayer and healing request came in. She didn't ask for it. A friend did. Mm-hmm. She has been off of her asthma inhaler and has had no effects since she woke up. And within days of the time that we put out the prayer request and healing request, she was up and about and moving and has never looked back and is healthier than she was before. And we've seen that. We've seen, you know, another good friend of ours, her daughter was pregnant, and the baby in vitro, they found a brain tumor, and they were considering terminating the pregnancy. And we put out a huge prayer and healing request. And when they went into the doctor, I think it was a week or two later, there was absolutely no sign of the tumor. So that to me has been, I think, you know, I've seen spirits, I've seen shadow people, I've heard things. I think one of the most important and powerful things that I've ever experienced is watching how prayer and healing and people coming together work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. I'm a definite believer in that. And for some people, I think if they don't want to take credit or responsibility, it's easier to say that God will do it, you know, but from what I can tell, a lot of the times it is sort of a direct energy from those who are praying. And it may also be that it opens the door for higher spirits, whether you want to call them angels or something else, to also get involved. That's possible too.
Well, I know even in the Bible it says when more than one of you come together and pray for things and ask for it in my name, miracles will happen. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we've seen it time and time again. So I would, you know, I'll say, you know, even when the suicide bombers did what they did on 9/11, one of the first things that we did was we prayed for the suicide bombers and their families because of the amount of hate that would be poured out towards them.
Right.
And not, you know, not so much for the bombers themselves, but more in the way of, you know, asking for the families to be loved and supported through this, because it's going to be, this is going to have ramifications on their families for centuries.
I don't know if it was in the book, but that was one of the messages that came through as to something that surprised them the most.
Was
the
that
suicide bombers were surprised how many people prayed for them.
Mm-hmm.
And they were touched by that.
Interesting. I've... You know, I mean, we can only scratch the surface, of course, doing a show like we do here. But for people, you know, that are out there, Dr. Heath, that are on the wall and are dealing with the negativity right now in the world, and they're feeling the depression, what words can you give them from the many cases that you worked on and the many channeling sessions and the things you found? What words can you give them that you think would be most effectual for them to hear and take away from, you know, maybe swaying them from suicide?
Well, two things. One is that, unfortunately, there is an afterlife, and a lot of people want to kill themselves because they feel that'll be an end to the pain, and they'd do anything to end the pain. But it doesn't end the pain, because you're still aware. You still have consciousness, and people who are mired in depression, that's all they become aware of, because there's no physical plane to distract them anymore. So it gets worse instead of better. The other thing I would say is there's always help. If we can listen to ourselves in the quiet moments, there's always guides and people who love us around trying to help us. And it's sort of open up to that possibility. And, you know, sometimes it's just putting one foot in front of the other, the hard slog, as I like to put it, of life. Mm-hmm. But, you know, one thing about life is it's kind of like the weather. It doesn't stay the same. It's not going to be universally horrible forever. I mean, sooner or later, things are going to shift. And it's about hanging in there for that.
Well, and like you said, I mean, even if the weather changes, if you don't open the door and walk out into it, you know, you have to start living life. It's not just going to happen for you. It's making that first conscious decision of opening the door and taking a step out of where you're at right now.
Yeah, and if you ever saw What the Bleep Do You Know?
Right.
There's an interesting section of that that talks about how you can become actually addicted to your own emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And if you spend a lot of time being very sad, very depressed, you can actually get addicted to that feeling.
Right, and we've actually seen that where people, they when they stop doing that, they actually feel like a sense of loss in that as well.
Yeah.
Because they wear it like a shield, like a proud shield, and look at what I've done, look at the pain I've gone through, and
Right. Look
how put upon and crappy my life is.
Yeah, therapists see that all the time. It's hard to let go of, and yet it is worth doing.
Mm-hmm.
It really is worth doing, and you can reset your baseline to a happier place. You don't have to live, you know, if they find that people sort of have mood baselines, and some people, they're normal, and when you have something good that happens, you'll go up normally, and when you have something bad, you go down normally, and then you come back to that normal baseline. If you're depressed and you have something that good that happens to you, you don't have much of a bump.
Right.
If you have something that bad that happens to you, it's like you get this extended drop, and from starting in the wrong baseline point.
Well, they've actually proven, you know this as a doctor too, right, that the chemical that your body secretes with pain is very similar to what goes on during depression. So sometimes chronic pains and ailments can mm-hmm. be cured just by dealing with the depression, because when they lift that veil, you're not doubling up the pain or the secretion that the body's kicking out that feels like pain and depression at the same time.
Yeah, that's a complex. I mean, when you start talking about pain, that's much more complex than that. I don't really want to get into.
Well, right. No, but I just mean that the body can, because you're talking about how when you have a good thing happen, it's just a little blip on the radar, but something
right.
negative feels so much worse is because the body is. If you're in this place already, it's already shooting so much of this toxic crap into your system that can just continually make you feel mired. We have to take another quick break. We'll come back. Let's give away. I've got another book right now. We'll give it away. It's called The Orb Project. We're going to give away a copy of The Orb Project. We'll give that away right now to the seventh caller. If you want to win that, pick it up. Give us a call right now, 651-989-5855. 651-989-5855. We'll be back more with Dr. Pamela Heath on Darkness Radio right here on 100.3 K-Talk.
Click it or sit in it. Know the latest traffic conditions before you leave home at ktlkfm.com. Keyword traffic.
Good evening. Welcome back to the show. This is Darkness Radio, where you're home for paranormal talk radio every Saturday and Sunday night. If you've missed any part of tonight's show and you'd like to catch up on it, check out Darkness Radio at www.ktlkfm.com. Again, that's ktlkfm.com. Click on the Darkness Radio podcast link and you'll see the show up there within minutes of the time that it actually airs. So this hour will be up in about 15 to 20 minutes after the top of the next hour. And you can stay tuned with us because Dr. Pamela Heath is going to stick with us, and we're going to be talking more and discussing more of her research. Dr. Heath, let's get a little bit more of your background as well. Now, as a parapsychologist, I mean, what do you do? That's something that's always intrigued me, people that have a degree and are involved in parapsychology. What exactly is that the study of? And you know, I mean, how do you test in that gray? You know, that's just something that's always been an interest to me.
Which I think surprises a lot of people. It looks at how our consciousness can interact with the environment and others around us, which would be ESP,
mm-hmm.
and also mind-matter interaction. And it also looks at whether that consciousness can survive death. So ESP, survival, and mind-matter interaction, which used to be known as psychokinesis. That's the only topics. That's it. And it got started in the late 1800s. There's very few places, unfortunately, where you can get a formal degree in parapsychology now. They're pretty much limited to a few universities in Europe and Edinburgh. I got my degree here in California at a school that later got bought out and the program got closed. My interest really was more in terms of experiential research. So I decided from the get-go that I wasn't going to focus on proof. There's actually been a tremendous amount of very good proof-oriented research done by parapsychologists, double-blind, triple-blind, you know, you name it. If it was going to convince people, it would have already done so. So I decided I'm not going to worry about proving it to others for whom it can never be proven. I'm going to worry about understanding how it works and how can we better understand it. How can we design better studies? How can I tell people who are experiencing this how to deal with things more effectively?
Well, you said that in your bio you started having spontaneous psychic moments. What is a spontaneous psychic moment?
Ooh, well, you know, I probably was having psychic experiences longer than I realized, but at the point where I couldn't deny it anymore, I could tell you exactly what kind of case I was going to do at what hour of the night as an emergency on call as a physician. And I was answering people's questions before they said them out loud, which really freaked people out. I was also experimenting with self-healing. I spent about a month experimenting with that and seeing what I could and couldn't do, and that was very interesting.
Now, as a doctor, I mean, yeah. Is that something that was hard for you to wrap your mind around logically, self-healing?
Yeah, well, it was, but not that I, you know, most parapsychologists, if you look at us, grew up loving science fiction. So you're sort of open to the idea of the possibility of interesting things in the universe. But I just never thought it would be me. And I think that was what surprised me the most was if it had been some guru who'd meditated on a mountain for 30 years, I wouldn't have been surprised. But I was an ordinary person in my mind, so if I could do it, anybody could. And that's, I think, what kind of surprised me and why I really got interested in studying it and trying to understand it.
When you started going, can you tell me what the healings that you were getting involved in? I mean, how major, you know, I mean, just getting rid of a headache, were you able to, you know, make a compound fracture go back in the skin and heal itself?
Yeah, I have heard of people who could do that and could heal things by x-ray in 20 minutes. But I actually haven't ever tried that. I was doing more because I wasn't going to break my own arm just to see what I could do.
Come on, Doc. It's all for research.
I was experimenting with cuts, minor burns, things like that. What I found was, at least for me, everything seemed to go through the normal healing stages. They just went through them faster than you would expect. They went through them in hours instead of days. So I could heal something overnight that normally would take me a week to heal. And I experimented with different things. Like I would, for one cut, I would do the concentration, the meditation I needed to heal. For another, I wouldn't. And I'd sort of compare, you know, is this something that happens all the time now? No, you have to focus and do it. And I don't tend to advertise my healing, but I do sometimes get asked by friends to heal them and see those results.
Now, do you see the same kind of results when it's not a physical healing, when it's a mental issue or a psychological issue, depression, obsessive compulsive disorders, fear? Do you think that that can be affected by energy transference or prayer and things like that as well?
Well, certainly prayer, I think, can help people amazingly. But I have run into psychics who said they could heal mental illness. I don't know that it's been tested particularly. Beyond the fact that, you know, there were those groups of meditators that can influence violence. And they've shown that if you have a group of meditators focusing on meditation that move to an area, the crime rate goes down. So it does seem to be able to have at least some mental influence. And I've certainly many times been asked to send comfort to people. And that seems to be received. There's been some very good studies out on this coast on AIDS and anomalous healing, which have shown it does seem to have a difference. It does seem to increase survival rates. It does seem to improve laboratory results, things like that. So I do believe there's a physical effect that can happen, whether it be with sort of a prayer or a focused, you know, well-wishing, or whether it's done on perhaps a more focused healing.
But do you think that could be just kind of a placebo effect? Or are you seeing this on people that don't even know that?
Yeah. These were done as double blinds.
Okay.
And triple blinds. And when you're talking about laboratory results, where you have hard numbers, I think that's pretty good stuff. Now, not necessarily as big as studies. They've done at least three that I know of studies on AIDS patients. Again, all of them blind in every way. The doctors treating the patients didn't know he was getting taken care of the patients. Now, I'll add
we got to take another quick break here, Dr. Okay. Heath. We'll come back. We'll talk more about that. We'll talk more about your other books. Stay tuned, guys. This is a great show. Dr. Pamela Heath is our guest. Check out our website at PamelaHeath.com. This is Darkness Radio, and you're listening to the best of talk radio with the best in paranormal talk radio on 100.3 K-Talk.